welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston. And before I forget, there was something from last week's debate between the progressive frontrunner in Michigan's Democratic Senate primary race, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, and Miss APAC Congresswoman Haley Stevens, that I really wanted to talk about. And it was this line from Dr. Abdul that, well, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase or word, just kind of befuddled me a little bit. Just listen.
I think we need to be freezing property tax for seniors. If you paid off your home at some point, we can't expect you to keep up with property taxes that are going up. Now, how do we pay for that? Well, again, if we tax billionaires their wealth, if we were to invest in the Department of Education so that we're paying centrally for public schools in an equitable way, there are a lot of opportunities for us to lift the burden off of seniors who've done their job. They've worked extra hard. They deserve a dignified retirement, and we've got to be thinking about how to offer them that.
Strange, considering property taxes really hasn't been an issue that either candidate has addressed. I don't know. I was not expecting that one from Dr. Abdul, and it didn't make sense to me, and I'll explain why here in just a moment. Now, we have talked about property taxes here on the show a bit over the last couple of months because MAGA Republican House Speaker and man baby Matt Hall and the MAGA Republican State House pushed through legislation recently that would cut the state's education tax, which would slash property taxes by 14%, representing a $3 billion cut for schools. Now, this bill would also repeal taxes on personal sales and create more cuts on personal property taxes. And just to remind everyone on how much DTE and Consumers Energy really runs the show in Lansing, the MAGA Republican House bills would allow public utilities to claim these new property tax exemptions. Of course they would. Just as long as DTE and Consumers promise that they would lower energy rates in exchange. Oh, yes. I'm sure. I'm sure that's a promise DTE and Consumers Energy will keep. Don't you? Wait, you don't? Boy, are you cynical. I recently talked with progressive state representative Betsy Kafia here on the show, and we talked about this MAGA Michigan Republican idea to push so-called property tax reform. And look, whenever I hear reform, I get a bad feeling, like Star Wars, a bad feeling about this, because I think of the auto insurance reform bill that Governor Whitmer and MAGA Republicans passed in 2019 that didn't really reform anything for the consumers. It only helped the insurance companies. But this property tax reform has been a rallying cry for MAGA Republicans for years. And here's what Representative Kafia told us a couple of weeks ago on the show as to why she's not on board with this plan. Listen.
I mean, I think that there should be a good faith effort by anyone who purports that they represent and are there to serve the people of Michigan to try to ease the burden of high costs. But frankly, the first thing I think of with that is like, a lot of working class people can't even afford their own home. So a property tax cut doesn't actually necessarily help them at all. So there's that. I think that the other thing that is really important is what I haven't heard the speaker talk about is how he would then pay for the essential services that we all chip in our taxes for, like firefighting and snow plowing and our public libraries and how would we fund our schools. There is a way to bring relief to people without literally cutting out the very services that make our communities nice and livable to begin with. So to be blunt, I think that's kind of a red meat thing that's popular to throw out there, but I don't see a serious effort to figure out how to give people relief and also keep the services that we really want and need. I don't want to live in a community that can't afford snow plowing. I live in the north, right?
Can't
afford to build our roads and our infrastructure. So I think there are other things we can do. I would like to see us look at things like a progressive income tax so that the Betsy DeVosses of the world are paying their fair share, bringing relief to the lowest income folks who are carrying our economy on their backs, and making sure corporations who get a pretty sweet deal in Michigan right now And the ultra wealthy, like the DeVosses, are actually paying their fair share and then investing that back into building what we need in our communities.
Look, Representative Betsy Cafia is not wrong one bit. This whole game isn't about helping the working class. It's about stealing resources away from local municipalities and stealing money away from schools so that way we could just privatize everything. That's always been the DeVos plan for years, for decades. Privatization. Oh, and by the way, Republicans have yet to explain how they're going to make up the money being lost on their property tax cut for Betsy DeVos billionaires, other than saying they'll levy luxury taxes. They'll just create luxury taxes, some phantom taxes, some made-up taxes. We don't know because they didn't tell us. And of course, they just tell us, hey, we'll also just have to tighten our fiscal belts in Lansing. Tighten our belts in Lansing means taking away from the working class and giving more to the Epstein class, the DeVos class. Meanwhile, they work to find ways to cut pro-life programs in this recent budget, like the RX Kids program, the popular direct cash payments program to new moms across the state in both urban and rural areas that goes from Detroit up to the entire UP. It's always about taking money away for essential services to help working class Michiganders while funneling more and more money up to the donor class, to the DeVos class, to the Epstein class. And that's why I was confused by Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed's proposal to freeze property taxes for seniors. If anything, I would want to maybe grant some kind of tax breaks for new homeowners, since Gen Z and millennials are kind of priced out of the housing market altogether. It just seemed to me like he threw that line in there believing that, I don't know, maybe he could get a few more senior votes on his side. But that's not populism. It sounded more like pandering, especially considering that property taxes are a state and local issue and not a federal issue. Now, everyone knows that I endorsed Dr. Abdul on this show, and I think you got a pretty good idea during this whole year that I certainly don't want Haley Stevens winning. But for someone who's done a great job at messaging real, progressive, common sense, working class solutions, that property tax cut line for seniors from that debate, in a way, you know, to me, ceded ground to Republicans on an issue that they're pushing essentially just to help wealthier and wealthier older Michiganders. For me, I just would have liked to have heard more on how we have to tax billionaires like the DeVos family in the state in order to help the entire working class, in order to help the entire state thrive, you know, like they're doing in other states like Massachusetts. I don't know. Tell me what you think. leftoflansing@gmail.com, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Follow me on the socials and make sure to sign up and subscribe to the show on YouTube and also on Patreon. Now, coming up here in a few moments, Ben Ambrose will be joining me. Mr. Ambrose is running in the Democratic primary for Michigan's 2nd Congressional District, which essentially is the entire mid-Michigan region, including Gratiot County, my county, which is where, by the way, some of Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed's family originated from, just saying. Now, Ben is hoping to win this nomination to face off against the MAGA Republican congressman of the 2nd District, none other than human and corporate pylon John Molinar. Ugh. Ben Ambrose is coming up here in just a couple of moments. So getting back to the Senate race, and it's strange because we really haven't gotten many polls or independent polls to show where this race has really been between Abdul Al-Sayed and Haley Stevens, but we did get a new poll this week from WDIV TV Channel 4 in Detroit and the Detroit News showing Haley Stevens with a 48-41% lead, which is by far her biggest lead and one of the few times that we've seen a poll showing a lead for Stevens whatsoever. Now, the poll was conducted by the Glengariff Group, which performed a live operator poll surveying 500 likely Democratic primary voters a week ago, and the margin of error was around 4.5%. Now, Glengariff received a C rating from 538 in its accuracy recently, and I found a poll conducted by Glengariff back in the final week of October of 2023. A week before the November election, and the headline reads, Michigan Senator Gary Peters holds a 10-point lead over John James. Again, that was the final week of the election, and Glengariff had sitting Democratic Senator Gary Peters leading his opponent then, John James, who's running for governor this year, by 10 points. Gary Peters ended up beating John James by just over 1 percentage point. Let's see what other polls are showing, because we haven't seen a poll showing Stevens with that kind of a wide lead, or any lead for that matter. However, that Glengariff poll did show that still around 10% of voters remain undecided. Now, I like to play this clip that went viral on social media featuring Stevens at a campaign event here in Michigan, obviously. But stick with me after you hear Haley Stevens, okay? So listen.
I am going to be working on our behalf. I am going to be telling the stories on our behalf. And you better believe I'm going to be doing it with a little bit of joy, a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of energy, and a little bit of stick it to them. Because that's the Michigan way.
Okay, so Stevens has taken some ribbing and mocking from that clip. And unfortunately, you couldn't also see her body language either, which, to put it nicely, wasn't the greatest. But I'm reading some who say that this clip will actually endear her with voters, and others saying that in some kind of strange way, her inadvertent goofiness might actually work with voters. Now, I personally don't think that's going to be the case, but hey, you never really know, right? And I could be disastrously wrong, and we all know that I've been grossly wrong many times before. Hell, last week I had to give a mea culpa for backing Graham Plattner. But I just feel like she's trying too hard in reaching some kind of thick Michigan accent that's maybe not really there. Look, I've been hammering Governor Gretchen Whitmer on here over the last couple of years or so, and I think rightly so. But I will say this, her mid-Michigan or Lansing, Michigan accent never seemed forced to me at all. I mean, does Whitmer play it up at times? Yeah, sure, perhaps. But it's there. There's no doubt about it. I guess I'm just asking, does anybody in the Oakland County region, does anybody up there really talk like that? I mean, tell me, because maybe I'm missing out on some different kinds of Michigan accents around different parts of the state. Maybe I am. For me, at different points in my life, fellow Michiganders asked me where I was from. In high school, I'd sometimes get that question asked from classmates who maybe didn't really know me that well, or from teachers, and I would say, what are you talking about? I'm from Michigan. I was born in Michigan. And I remember being asked that question a lot while I was at Central Michigan University as a student, and being asked, hey, Pat, where are you from? I mean, what do you mean, where am I from? I just didn't understand for the longest time why I was being asked that question, since I was born at Detroit's Sinai Hospital on Easter Sunday, 1976. And yes, you don't have to do the math, everyone. I am well aware. I just turned 50 years old. Trust me, I know I'm getting old. Kids are now asking me, what was it like to be alive for Tupac and Biggie? I guess just like how I would used to ask my parents and their friends, hey, what was it like to be alive for the Beatles? That must have been cool. But I was wondering why so many of my peers at different stages of my life asked if I was from Michigan. I felt like I had a Michigan accent, you know, from being here my entire life. And whenever I visited family in Western Pennsylvania, they definitely knew I was from Michigan, where we say phone, they say phone. Or where we would say Bonnie, they say Bonnie. I'm not kidding. Listen to how they talk. Now, there was this one time I had a friend in college, so this is years back, and they just kind of confronted me a little, I'm going to use that word again, befuddled. And I said, what? And they said, why do you say words funny? I said, what do you mean, why do I say words funny? How am I saying words funny? What makes the way I say words sound funny? Yeah, like, you know, I'm Joe Pesci or something. And they said, well, you just say certain words like want. You say want wrong. And I say, what? How do you mean I'm saying want wrong? And so I asked them, I said, well, how do you say want? And they said, want. I said, so do I, want. They said, no, you say want, we say want. I said, wait, I'm still saying want. No, we say want. Want, oh. That's it. And that's where it hit me. That's right. I was saying want, not want. Michiganders say want a little more nasally. So that's where it hit me. And I just had like this epiphany. I said, oh my God, my parents, especially my late mom, have these thick Western Pennsylvania accents that never, ever left them. And then her mom, my grandma, would stay with us for months at a time, not to mention how many times we visited my dad's parents in Western PA, and I would spend around 3 weeks out there for many summers as a kid. I guess that Western Pennsylvania accent sort of blended in at times with my Michigan accent. For instance, I don't say locker room like many of Michiganders do. I say locker room. Like L-A-W-C-K-E-R, locker room. And some Michiganders, I remember, used to say milk. I never did, but I remember that being a thing was when I was a kid. Not sure if that's still the case today. I did get the whole Michigan nasal voice thing, which is different than Eastern Ohio and the Western Pennsylvania voice, where they speak a little more in the gut and they speak a lot slower. I definitely didn't get that. I can speak rather fast, and that's very Midwest of me. But where we Michiganders say, you know, we're going to get into the car, they say, we're going to get into the car. Where we say we have to put on our socks, they say, we're going to put on our socks. But I did get a bit of that, I don't know, enunciation somewhere inside me there that I guess has always been buried there. Thanks a lot to all my Western Pennsylvania relatives. But to get back to my point, wait, was there a point? Yeah, there was a point. Okay. And I am being genuine here. Okay. I am. Does Haley Stevens sound like any other Michiganders to you? For me, it just seems like she's trying too hard. But then again, maybe that's just me. Maybe there are other Michiganders in other regions of the state that sound just like Haley Stevens. Please let me know. leftoflansing@gmail.com. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. I didn't plan on my monologue going in that direction. I apologize, but I promise I'll have more important details to share with you and opinions to give you on this Senate race in just a bit. I just can't believe it is 3 weeks away until the primary. Finally, I think we're ready for this thing to really be over. Coming up here in just a few moments, Ben Ambrose, Democratic candidate for Michigan's 2nd Congressional District in the Mid-Michigan region, will join me. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free. But we won't be upset if you drop off a $5 donation when you visit. At the very least, it will help Pat pick up the bill the next time we meet up for lunch. I think I deserve it. And now you deserve more Left of Lansing.
So during the No Kings 2 rally in Alma, Michigan last spring, which is in Gratiot County, next to St. Louis, Michigan, which is also considered the middle of the mitten, geographically speaking, I had the pleasure of watching and listening to Democratic congressional candidate Ben Ambrose speak to some of the attendees at that rally. And if there's one part from that speech that kind of caught my attention and really my ears, it was how he talked about people like our current congressman in Michigan's 2nd District, MAGA Republican John Molnar, as well as the 1st District's Louisiana Jack Bergman, how these guys claim to be always about the working class and the working people in their districts, yet time and time again, their votes show how much they truly, really work for the billionaire class, or as I always say, the Epstein class. Ben Ambrose grew up on a farm in Newaygo County, served in the Marines, where he did some tours both in Iraq and Afghanistan, among other missions, and he's back in Michigan and believes that he is the right Democrat to face off against John Molnar in the midterms, and says that his campaign's main values are integrity, commitment, and trust. But first, of course, he's got to win the primary. So let's learn more about Ben Ambrose here this week. Ben, thanks so much for joining us here on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me. But just to correct you, my farm is actually in Oceana County. It's just over the Newaygo County and Oceana County line, but Hesperia is divided right in half of the two. And so there's a lot of folks there who fall in both sides of that and have different representation at the state level too, and don't even know it.
Hey, thank you very much for that correction. I want to make sure that we get all the information right here. And actually, that was going to be my next question. Exactly where did you grow up? I think it was in Hesperia. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, sort of. So I started in North Muskegon, and that's where we spent kind of most of our time. And then my family decided to purchase some land up in Hesperia, the later part of high school. And so it was just land. It wasn't a farm then. We turned it into a farm. My twin sister and I stayed at North Muskegon High School. It's where we graduated from. You know, and then I spent, I would say, the majority of my growing up, however you want to define growing up, impacted by living on that farm. And the farm that I now own outright, my family lives in Muskegon. You know, that hard work, down home, good, wholesome mentality is really what I took away from that. You know, and we would regularly help neighbors on hay day or shoveling their snow or doing, you know, regular chores, and then they would help us. And just, you know, it's a town that you grow up in where you don't have to lock your doors at night. And it's just a good, wholesome area, much like all of rural Michigan and all of rural America is.
Yeah, hard work is a mantra, obviously, in these parts. So what did you learn, or what kinds of values did you learn when you were on the farm?
I never taught myself to be a farmer, because that is a skill set that I do not possess. It is hard work. I am a numbers person. I'm a business person. I can do farming. I can fix a tractor. I just don't like doing it. It's not where I drive my pleasure from, as much as I like doing program management, project management, leadership, and mentoring other folks. It wasn't my skill set. So during the COVID time, I had actually moved back home, and that's when consulting, which is what my day job is, went totally remote. So my wife and I, who is also a consultant, were able to stay home and still take care of the farm and the animals and stuff while still doing our day jobs remotely. But back to your original question, the things that we learned was, you know, integrity, right? And that was just re-solidified during my time in the Marine Corps. It's the same thing as commitment. And those two pillars have been completely eroded by so many of our politicians today on both sides of the aisle. And that's one of the things that I talk about in my stump speech, is that erosion of commitment and integrity that have eroded our trust in politicians and in government today. So It's been my mission to start reversing that by being transparent, by being open, and by just being a normal human being. I like to say by just being the adult in the room.
Yeah. And we need more of that. So you're a numbers kind of guy. So I guess budgets are something that you kind of enjoy looking through. You'll be doing lot of that, I guess, if you get into Congress.
Yeah. And it's not just budgeting when you're in Congress, it's budgeting to get in as well. It's understanding how to file reports with the FEC, something that my campaign has been very transparent about on every dollar we receive from donations and every dollar that goes out. And that's one of the main, that in my experience, are the main distinguishing characteristics of my campaign in this primary. Unfortunately, my campaign has been the only one that has turned in accurate campaign finance reports quarterly, which is required by federal law.
John Molnar has it?
John Molnar does turn in his, yes.
Okay.
I was specifically meaning in the primary.
In the primary. Yep. Gotcha. So I mentioned your military service. What made you want to join the Marines?
Yeah. So when I was just graduating high school, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities for me. So I set out to join the military and find kind of where my path would lead through that course. And it took an amazing pathway. So 6 days after I graduated from high school, I went to Marine Corps boot camp, and I stayed there for nearly 2 decades. Well, not in boot camp, but I stayed, you know, in the Marine Corps for nearly.
I was going to say that was tough.
Yeah, that would have been horrible. But, you know, the skills that we get and the, you know, the, both the soft and the hard skills that we receive, and I spent most of my time in the infantry, are amazing skill sets that prepare me for this next stage of my life and for leadership and mentorship, as well as being a voice for the people. And that is, you know, the things that the soft skills, the management, you know, understanding what integrity really means and how to be transparent, how to do things that maybe you don't necessarily feel like doing. And I constantly tell folks that my beliefs are actually pretty irrelevant. It really matters what the people need, because if I come into this job and I don't represent the majority of this district rather than a party, then I should be fired.
Yes, always, always put country over party. That is something that we talk a lot about here on this show. Ben, before we move on, when did you enlist exactly?
So I enlisted in 1999.
Oh, so this is, oh, wow. Okay, so before 2001.
Yep.
And then where'd you go?
I took an early retirement in 2016 is when I got out. So I did 17 years. And then after that, I was in grad school. But, you know, I did time in Iraq, Afghanistan. I was on the East Coast in Camp Lejeune. I was on the West Coast in Camp Pendleton and 29 Palms. I've been stationed all over the place. I did a humanitarian mission in Haiti after the earthquake in 2000. And I think it was 2009, maybe. It was,
you were there
the
for
one
that.
That killed 500,000 people. My unit was recalled after we'd been home for about 10 days. We were back on the same ship and heading back down to Haiti. Or not back down. We were heading to Haiti at that point. We had just gotten back from a Mediterranean float. I've been all over the world. I think I stopped counting the number of countries I was in around 30 or 31 countries. I just stopped counting at that point. And I think I was probably in my late 20s then.
Was when you were in Haiti, was that one of the more horrific, sights that you witnessed?
Not necessarily. It obviously came with its own challenges. The people of Haiti were very welcoming and they were really happy to see us come down there. And the thing is, we didn't have a whole lot of skill sets. I mean, we were Marines, we were trained for war. We didn't have a lot of skill sets necessarily to help rebuild a civilization that had been decimated by a major earthquake. And actually, there were a couple earthquakes while we were there that continued the destruction. But there were gangs that were running the area, that were running Carrefour and Laogan, where we were at. There were children who I remember specifically sitting on the steps of their homes that had been just completely crushed with nowhere to go because their parents were inside when the house fell. And Haiti's biggest issues was that there was no middle class. There are very few haves and a whole lot of have-nots. Because of that, they don't have the capabilities to build like we do here, with reinforced walls and with the ability to create new technologies to have a better society. And so they're really stagnant. And that's really something that I'm afraid I'm starting to see here is that with this shrinking middle class that we have here in the United States, while our social programs like Social Security is put on the backs of the middle class completely instead of everyone sharing equally in that responsibility. And the last thing I ever want to see is the country that I fought for turn into an America that I did not fight for.
Is that one reason why you really wanted to get into the race? Because I, as you heard in my introduction, I remembered how you talked about how Congress, a lot of people in Congress, are working more for the billionaire class and not for the working class. Is that one reason why you really wanted to get in? Is that you kind of want to see a more fair playing field?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only just a more fair playing field, but I just wanted to see the government start working for the people. And that's not what I have been seeing. And so, I've got two great examples of that. In 2020, when Donald Trump had lost the election, Texas sued Pennsylvania and Michigan. Jack Bergman and John Molinar specifically signed on to that lawsuit. And representation is in the word, it's in the job title, representative. And that means you have your constituents' backs, whether you agree with them or not. And it's important to note that the election they tried to overturn was an election that both of them won. So they literally sold out their own people as well. That, by definition, is not commitment. And because of that erosion of commitment, we see more trust eroded today. And the other example that I cite is the programs that I was managing for the VA, specifically at that time, was the Office of Healthcare Informatics. And we had 88,700 veterans who were part of a group whose data had anomalies in it that was no fault of their own through a program that transfers data from the Department of Defense to the Veterans Benefits Administration, the VBA, so that they can get healthcare, they can get disability, and they can get retirement. And my team was specifically hired by the VA to find these anomalies in their data. And sometimes it's like an added Social Security number or maybe an extra number and a birth date, so the computer can't recognize them. And many of these folks had already been honorably discharged or had been retired. But because we digitized their data, it ended up that they were denied healthcare after receiving it for years. So my team was essentially brought in there to find these anomalies and to fix them. And we had fixed 13,410 of these anomalies when DOGE canceled our contract for being frivolous and unimpactful. So there were 66,000 plus veterans out there that would still receive no healthcare, no disability, and no retirement benefits whatsoever. I wouldn't call that, not impactful. We had been working very, very diligently and doing, and were well ahead of schedule on our contracts. But this was just an example of how the government wanted to save money, and then they taxed the middle class even more and let the billionaires have better tax benefits. Meanwhile, we've got veterans and the middle class suffering. Those are two big examples as to why I decided to run for office. We need real representation that isn't going to bend party lines, that doesn't mind flipping a table and throwing a chair to take care of the people that they represent.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, since you were actually somebody who experienced what DOGE was doing to certain parts of the government, if that was really one reason that got you into this race. And you just said, yeah, that is one reason. So you really got to feel that pain. And thanks for reminding us about what happened in 2020. I remember when John Molinar was one of those votes to basically nullify our votes. And what blew my mind with that whole thing, Ben, is that, again, that would mean he's disqualified.
Right.
But they were just doing it. They were just doing it because that's what their dear leader told them to do. And it's sad. That's not leadership. That's not fighting for the people.
No. And, you know, and I've said many times to folks that Republicans and Democrats really are not that different. And we have many of the same things that we agree on and many things that we don't agree on. But I can always respect someone, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, who says, I want to do X, Y, and Z. When they get into office, they legitimately try to do X, Y, and Z to make the people's lives better. That's the whole point. That doesn't always agree with the system that I envision. And that's okay. I can respect somebody who at least is a person of their word and tries to do the right thing for the people, even if it doesn't align with my vision, right? Which is totally fine. I am very aware that I am not always right, as well my wife points out multiple times. But the reality is that's not what was happening here. They weren't doing the right thing for the people. They weren't doing it for their constituents. They were doing it for one person that would try to keep them in power. And that person hasn't come to either of their aides at all because they're garbage representatives.
You know, in that speech that I talked about that you gave at that No Kings rally last spring, you mentioned how, you know, there's a dearth of jobs and opportunity around where you grew up. And I think you could say that for a lot of the Michigan area, especially once you kind of get west of the Great Lakes Bay region there. What are some of your ideas on getting more economic growth in this area? I was just wondering, you know, what would you say? Because you said that was really one thing that you'd really try to do as a congressman, was bring more economic opportunity here.
You know, one of the things we have to look at is why the United States is so far behind other countries in the rest of the world, right? And I look at things like farming and agriculture, which is one of the U.S.'s best commodities and one of our biggest, most impactful aspects of our GDP. And so Michigan is no different. Right. And this district, the second district of Michigan, adds a considerable amount to our GDP through agriculture. Well, there's no reason that we can't bring in technologies today, such as something called precision farming or precision agriculture, which is essentially using new technology improvements to supplement farmers, to help farmers produce more agriculture, more yield, more crops at lower costs. So the farmer makes more money. The shelves in our grocery stores are abundant with food, and that lowers the costs for all the people. And so we need to take care of our farmers and we need to find ways that benefit them. And by utilizing precision agriculture or other technologies that are out there that can help them do that without taking away jobs, we need to add jobs. That is the most important thing to make sure that our economy thrives, not just survives. We have to figure out a way, and technology is one of those things that we can utilize that will help farmers and help bring more jobs into the second district. We have some incredible schools here. We've got Central Michigan. We've got Ferris. We've got some amazing universities here that are on the forefront of adding new jobs with not just technology, but with agriculture and other aspects. Why don't we utilize some of their expertise to do that here in this district? And that's something that I'm very, very passionate about doing.
You know, I am of the belief, Ben, that in order to really attract businesses to the states, something I've been harping on a lot on the show through the last couple of years, we have to have an educated workforce, which is what you just brought up. What kinds of policies would you advocate for when it comes to education? Both, you know, I'm not just talking about higher education, also, you know, K through 12. What would Ben Ambrose in Congress fight for when it comes to education?
Yeah, so that's a multi-complex question, but I think the simplest way to answer it is, first and foremost, we have to fund the Department of Education. That is the most important aspect there. Now, one of the things that I brought up was obviously four-year universities, but we have a desert of other education opportunities here in the second district, as well as the rest of America. And that's trade schools and apprenticeship programs. We need to focus much harder on those two aspects of education, because that's part of our educated workforce. Getting folks educated through an apprenticeship program or a trade school gets them out into our economy now. We're not waiting 10 years for that person to make enough money to actually start putting into our economy and making a difference. We're getting folks out there who are going to be part of the middle class immediately, who are going to be putting into the economy immediately, who are going to be doing good work in our infrastructure that take care of Americans. And that's something we need to put more energy into than we ever have before. Currently, the federal government covers about a third of the trade schools that are out there in the U.S. And we need to figure out why and why not more, and how do we increase that? And that's something the Department of Education needs to do more of. And they can't do that without any funding. And it's the same thing for apprenticeship programs. Why aren't we pushing folks and funding folks to do apprenticeship programs to get a great education in that skilled trade and get them out in the economy working today? Those are things we need to really focus on, because that educated working class is really what's going to sustain America. Here's the other part of that. We need to ensure a top quality product. And the way that we do that is with labor and labor unions. I've been backed by the UAW. We're in discussions right now with Teamsters. We all agree on the same thing. Our unionized labor is incredibly important, because the point of labor is to defend each other. It's like the Marine Corps. We're there to take care of each other no matter what. We're there to defend the little guy, quote unquote. That's what unions do. At the same time, they ensure a top quality product. And we have to keep that tradition up. So the government needs to start backing these trade schools, these apprenticeship programs, and understanding how important unions really are in labor today.
When it comes to John Molinar, and we're talking about economic opportunities, education here in the 2nd Congressional District, he would say, "Hey, I was a vote for the big, beautiful bill. That's going to make a lot of things, a lot of everybody's lives a lot better." And it seems like that he's also for whatever we are doing in Iran, which of course is raising fertilizer prices for Michigan farmers. Of course, gas prices are higher. What are some of the main sticking points that you have? Like, if John Molnar were in the room right now and he had to talk about the economy, where do you think he has gone wrong the most?
I would first ask him why he purposely sought out a company out of Boca Raton, Florida, and offered them a sole-sourced, non-compete, non-labor contract, which violates the federal acquisition regulations, the FAR, we call it, and why he's now taxing Michigan citizens, Michiganders, $84 million a year that is going down to Boca Raton, Florida for a for-profit prison in Baldwin. That would be my first question. Essentially, this contract that he sought out specifically for with GEO Inc. is an 83 point, I want to say 4 or 5. I'd have to look at the exact numbers. It's almost $84 million a year of taxpayer dollars is funding a for-profit prison in Baldwin, Michigan. And that company is based out of Boca Raton, Florida. I would also ask him why he received massive donations from GEO in the amount of $230,000 or so before the contract was initiated, and then a little over $100,000 after the contract was initiated. I mean, this is very clearly corruption, not to mention that this was a non-compete contract. As a consultant and somebody who has written contracts for the United States government for a living, I have never once seen a sole-sourced, non-compete, non-labor contract in my life. That would be my first question.
Now, wouldn't John Molnar tell voters, "Well, maybe what some of what you're saying is right, but I'm doing this to protect Michiganders"? What would be your
Sure,
response to
and
that?
I would easily fire back with, so your idea of protection is removing a workforce, labor force from our fields that are putting food on the shelves, that are benefiting programs like SNAP for our children, that are putting into our economy, that are putting into Social Security, that are putting into Medicare. And your idea of protection is to put them behind bars and still charge the American people to cover that bill. So now, instead of putting into the economy, his idea of protection is taking from the American people, from the same Michiganders he represents, and removing major aspects from our economy, from our Social Security, and from our Medicare and Medicaid services.
All right, so real quick, I know that we're almost out of time here, Ben. If you were in Congress today, would you have been a yes vote for a war powers resolution to put the power back in Congress when it comes to declaring war, like, what's happening with Iran?
Oh, 100%. That's one of the big, as somebody who has been to war multiple times, that should be congressionally approved at all times. And Congress should have the ability to pull the plug when things aren't going well. Because again, this is about national security. This is about the people. It's not about what Donald Trump wants.
Also, do you accept any AIPAC money?
No, nope, not at all.
Glad
AIPAC
you.
hasn't reached out. I haven't reached out to them. I have no desire to.
Okay. Democrats in Congress right now, they're trying to force a vote on a proposal that would cut all taxpayer aid, United States taxpayer aid to Israel. And it does seem like right now, according to some reports, that at least over 150 Democrats right now voice that they will be a vote for that resolution. How would you view that?
Yeah, I mean, while Israel has been a strategically important ally in the past, it's very clear that the sentiment of the American people today is that they do not want to support Benjamin Netanyahu. They do not want to support the genocide that he has created. That they also recognize that there's a major distinction between the Israel people and the Israel government headed up by Bibi Netanyahu. And at this point, the overwhelming sentiment of the American people is that they don't want anything to do with Israeli politics right now, to include this war in Iran. I'm on the side of distancing ourselves from war criminals like Bibi Netanyahu, which is a stark contrast from not just this administration, but from John Molinar as well.
All right, and I can't let you go before asking you your stance on hyperscale AI data centers.
Oh, I think they're an absolute horrible thing. I think they're absolutely terrible. I like to tell my staff, when they bring me ideas, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, but it's not compelling. There are some interesting technologies in and around data centers, from closed looped systems and all kinds of stuff, but they're not compelling. And I'm not convinced that they need to be in Michigan's backyard. And I'm certainly not accepting that we could lose our valuable resources like the Great Lakes or the Manistee National Forest to build data centers. Personally, let them go up in Oklahoma or Kansas, because they're data. It's electronic data. We can access it just as fast as if they're there than if they're in the Manistee National Forest. And I would also submit that a fantastic possibility of places they could go would be the Ohio State football stadium.
All right, and I lied. I have one more question. What would
Okay,
you say?
go
What
for
would
it.
you say to somebody like Michigan Congresswoman Lisa McClain from the Thumb Region? So could be maybe your future colleague here, who got on the mic this week and declared, not paraphrasing here, but declared that those of us who oppose Trump and MAGA Republicanism hate our country, and that if we despise this direction that we're going into right now, we should just leave the country. What's your response to Republicans like that when they spew that kind of rhetoric?
My response is that is the same rhetoric that I personally defended her freedom to say. And if she'd like to say it, then that's perfectly acceptable to say. I don't like it, but that's the point of the First Amendment. And it is more important to maintain our right to the freedom of speech than to ever censor someone. I don't have to like it. I don't have to agree with it, but I will fight for her right to say that. At the same time, I would ask her how many pairs of boots she's put on, how many deployments she's been on to fight for this American concept that we have today. And you're always going to get fringe folks on both sides, the left and the right. And that's just one more clear indication that we need somebody to be the adult in the room. And clearly, Lisa McClain is not that adult.
No, not at all. Not at all. Ben Ambrose, how can people find you? And if they'd like to help out with your campaign, volunteer, or whatever, where can they go?
Yeah. Honestly, the best place to go is there's two of them. We have a fantastic Facebook group under Ben Ambrose for Congress. And you can also go right onto the website, which is ambrose4congress.com. The donate button will take you directly to Act Blue. And that's something we all need help with right now. We cannot win this without the community coming together and pitching in. I wasn't independently wealthy. I'm still not. And we need to ensure that we have people representing people here instead of the rich doing all of that. So really the only way we can do this is a rising tide raises all boats, and the people in this district are the boats. But those who come together and pitch in and click that donate button, that's the blue wave. That's the ocean tide rising. And so we need folks to jump in and help us out here more than anything. But that being said, we're doing a fantastic job so far. We've done better than any Democrat in the history of this district. We're a serious candidate that's putting John Molinar on his heels, and we're going to fire him in November.
People representing people. I like that one there, Ben. Ben Ambrose, Democratic candidate for Michigan's 2nd Congressional District. Good luck in the primary. And hey, I'd love to talk to you maybe in the fall as we get close to the midterms then. Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to.
If you'd like to talk to Pat at any time, his email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to vent about the Trump regime? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to complain about stupidity in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to debate which Great Lake is the best? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. That one's a fun one. Bye.
A special thanks again to Ben Ambrose for joining us and for reminding us of how Republican John Molinar is benefiting from that ICE detention, or as I call them, concentration camp that's happening up there in Baldwin. The GEO Group, the for-profit prison company of that camp, is making money off our money. And while putting away or scaring away migrant workers, that will also add cost to our grocery costs. So a double whammy for we, the working class, throughout the state of Michigan. By the way, Ben Ambrose has not only been endorsed by the UAW, as we discussed, but he's also been endorsed by the Michigan Farmers Union, as we've had them on here before. And because we just didn't have enough time to talk about every issue, Ben Ambrose is a backer of Medicare for All. I'll provide a link to Ben's campaign site and where you can donate to his campaign, wherever you're listening here to the show. Sure, look, it's going to be an uphill battle to defeat John Molinar in the 2nd District, but we've been begging for someone to represent the other side, the working class side, for such a long time in these red areas. John Molinar believes his seat is safe. Let's make Republicans have to actually earn these kinds of seats for a change. The LOL web poll for this week: do you approve of Democratic minority leaders Hakeem Jeffries in the House and Chuck Schumer in the Senate? Do you approve of Democratic minority leaders Hakeem Jeffries in the House and Chuck Schumer in the Senate? Yes or no? You can vote on Left of Lansing's Patreon page or on YouTube or on Twitter. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Well, Michigan Democratic Senator Gary Peters endorsed Ms. APAC, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, to be his successor in Michigan's Democratic primary race for his seat. Peters made the announcement earlier this week, and really not much of a surprise whatsoever, since the establishment is always backing its own to hold on to power. I mean, let's just face facts, everyone. Gary Peters, a milquetoast senator, and he never really moved the political needle either here in Michigan or elsewhere. I mean, he barely beat John James for the seat in 2020, for God's sakes. That was when Joe Biden won the state of Michigan. But there are some rather disturbing parts of this race, the Senate race, showing why it's tough for the working class to get a working class representative or senator in Washington, at least a strong working class voice in Washington. First off, over $50 million have been spent on behalf of Haley Stevens so far. $50 million in ad campaigns. And a lot of that money is coming from, yeah, you guessed it, APAC, under the guise or a super PAC called United Democracy Project. You see, just 13%, I'll say that number again, just 13% of Democratic voters, according to an NBC poll recently, have a positive opinion of Israel. And that's why you won't see the name APAC on any of these APAC ads. And then they release ads showing President Obama thanking Haley Stevens for her work with the auto bailout, because that's what it was. It was a bailout. No different than what we did with the banksters. And the ad deceptively makes it look like Barack Obama is endorsing Haley Stevens. And it's working somewhat. And we don't have the data, like hard numbers, to confirm it. But reporter Sam Robinson from the Michigan Chronicle went around and talked to some African-American voters in Detroit, with some of them, not all of them, mind you, not all of them, but with some of them saying that, yeah, they're voting for Stevens because Obama backed her. Obama's given no such endorsement in this race, yet that's what APAC is trying to insinuate with these ads. And isn't it just rich for APAC to run such an ad showing Barack Obama, considering how much APAC fought against Barack Obama's Iran nuclear deal? They wanted that deal torn up. And that's why APAC backed Dear Leader Trump, because they knew that he would indeed rip that whole deal up. And then they knew that there was a good chance that Israel could get that idiot to start a war with Iran. That's exactly what happened. Isn't it rich for them to use Barack Obama right now when they trashed him when he was president? Yet Haley Stevens still accepts their money. Gladly accepts their money. Hell, many in the Democratic Party opposed Obama's Iran nuclear deal, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. On top of that, we've got APAC and Emily's List running these unfounded lies about Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed being a misogynist. They don't produce any kind of proof. They just say, oh yeah, he's a misogynist. You know what that means, everyone? They're just trying to paint him as Muslim man bad. There's no discussion about policy. There's no discussion about who is financing these campaigns. Now, let me quickly tell you about a move in the U.S. House last year to sanction the International Criminal Court in retaliation for its arrest warrants against Israeli Prime Minister and butcher Benjamin Netanyahu and the country's former defense minister. That bill passed the House last year, and it received 45 votes from Democrats. There were two Michigan Democrats who voted along with MAGA Republicans to sanction the International Criminal Court because it wanted to charge those responsible for the genocide in Gaza. And those two Democrats in Michigan were Haley Stevens and Sherry Thandahar. Yeah, Haley Stevens was one of those 45 votes. Despicable, disgusting, and disqualifying. Yeah, and Sherry Thandahar was the other vote. Please, 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 Detroit voters, back Democratic State Representative Donovan McKinney over the crypto creep Sherry Thandahar in the primary election in 3 weeks. Please do that. He'll be so much better for it. Anyway, when you talk about policies and issues, Haley Stevens isn't with the majority of working class Michiganders. Case in point, she and her campaign are attacking Dr. Abdul for his claim that $700 million in medical debt were canceled in Wayne County. And you know what? You know what? I'll grant them the satisfaction that, yes, Dr. Abdul, who was the former Wayne County and Detroit Health Director, did not erase $700 million in medical debt in Wayne County yet. The program in question is hoping to erase $700 million in medical debt for some 300,000 Wayne County residents. Bridge Michigan reports that so far, the program has erased over $50 million in medical debt for over 80,000 citizens. 80,000. I mean, that's more than the seating capacity at Ford Field. Now, a national nonprofit called Undo Medical Debt, that's working with Wayne County to erase medical debt, told Bridge Michigan that the process is taking longer than originally expected. And the spokesperson for Undo Medical Debt said, typically for us, it takes about a year or 2 years to really get things going with the program to build those relationships with hospitals and providers. And the spokesperson also noted that for most hospitals, selling off debt is a new process. So the process is taking longer than expected, but it has helped thousands in Wayne County so far. Haley Stevens says people are attacking Dr. Abdul for working to eliminate the medical debt of thousands of Michiganders. Why? I mean, the funding came from the American Rescue Plan Act. I mean, that act is something that Haley Stevens voted for. Why isn't she joining Dr. Abdul and celebrating how over 80,000 Michiganders aren't dealing with medical debt anymore? Strange. And Bridge Michigan reports also that Dr. Abdul's claims of his work with nonprofits to get 16,000 glasses to kids who need them is quite accurate. Has Haley Stevens congratulated Dr. Abdul for helping kids see in the state of Michigan? No. She'd rather keep everyone in the dark about all of the dark money from AIPAC and other corporations like DTE have given her. But hey, you know, don't worry, everyone. Don't worry. They won't expect anything in return, right? You know better. We have the money to fund Medicare for all. We have the money to erase medical debt. We have the money for eye care, for dental care. We have the money for child care in this country. But some would rather vote to spend more money to allow ICE to terrorize our streets. And here's an honest and good faith question in this Michigan Senate race. If you support Haley Stevens and are a Democratic voter, do you believe it's good policy to send hundreds of billions of dollars to fund Israel and its wars rather than spend money for working class Michiganders? It's just all about priorities. It's called priorities and it's called policy, both of which Haley Stevens and many establishment Democrats never want you to talk about. Don't doubt me.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks again to Ben Ambrose for being on the show this week. Next week, I've got a treat for you. Our wonderful show voice, Jessica, will be on next week's episode, and you'll get to hear her thoughts on the Senate race. You'll hear Jessica's thoughts on the Trump regime. I'm sure she'll have a couple of those. Maybe we'll talk about Gretchen Whitmer, daylight saving time, the best Beatles era, and, you know, really what it's like to work with such an esteemed and just a perfect podcaster and former broadcaster like myself. Okay. Yeah, I know. I can hear her saying, oh, brother, on that last one. But show voice Jessica will join me in the attic next week. So look forward to that one. By the way, stop messing around with daylight saving time. It's daylight saving time, not daylight savings time. Just leave things alone. But if you are going to set a standard, then set everything back to standard time. I've never been a fan of daylight saving time. Just leave it alone. Leave everything alone. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.